basically his mom has no rules, no regulations. He's kind of a free range kid. He has two older brothers, 23 and 19, from his mom. So he definitely has a lot of older influence, which I've always been like, really, I don't know, it's not my cup of tea. And now that my son is getting older, he's six, and he misses his brother. Well, kind of going all over the place, but anyways, so that's not how I want my son raised, and it's not how I want Vinny raised either. I mean, I love him, he's a great kid, but he's kind of making some wrong turns. And
how much time does he spend at your house, and how much time does he spend at the other house?
Well, all his time at his mom's now. He was here almost every weekend. And then he had kind of a falling out with his mom. Not sure what exactly happened. He ended up over with his middle brother at their grandparents for about a week. I was kind of pushing, you know, Steve to say, you know, what's going on over there? Should we be talking to the grandparents to make sure everything's okay? And he's like, you know, it's fine, it's fine. And as time went on, he's thinking, you know, this isn't okay, like, what's going on? So he was trying to get to the bottom of it. And basically, Vinny told us, well, I'm going to be living over there from Monday till Thursday, and I'll come to your house on Friday to Saturday, and or Friday to Sunday. And we're like, well, we still need to have a meeting of all the adults. And the more he put, that was, Vinny was here at our house that weekend. And the more we pushed, he was just like, I'm out of here. So he immediately texted his mom, said, come pick me up. Granted, he didn't want to be with his mom for that prior week for whatever reason. So she came and picked him up. And after that, it was weeks until we saw him again. And, you know, Steve was very upset by this. He went through anger, sadness. I honestly think he's a little depressed right now, but he doesn't want to admit that, you know, his heart is broken, that his son doesn't want anything to do with us, and we don't know why. So he did start coming over. He came over Easter weekend because we were going to a baseball game. So that was kind of like broke the ice. He came with us, and it seems like he's only wanting to come over if there's a chance of him getting something or us doing something fun. And anytime Steve asks him, you know, let's get to the bottom of this, what's going on, he's like, well, you know, I've just moved on to other things, or nothing's wrong, and you know, I'm 11 and I want to do what I want. And so this really hurts Steve's feelings. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm just trying to be support. And my poor son, he loves his brother so much. He told me, oh, I want to cancel my birthday if my brother can't be here. Mm. So luckily he did come to his birthday, so that was good. But, you know, he's always like, when's Vinny going to be here? And I miss my brother. And so now we're getting ready for him to come over this weekend. And I just have this pit in my stomach, because usually what happens is the week after, we're just in turmoil.
Yeah.
It brings up these feelings, and Steve can't talk to his son about it. So me and Anthony are, you know, the safe place. And so I feel like he kind of takes it out on us, and I can see it happening. And I'm like, okay, you know, I can only take so much, you know, and then I start to, so I don't know what to do. I mean, it's like, I'm dreading this visit, and I don't want it to be that way. So what can I do?
Did you want to start, or do you want me to start? So, a few things stuck out to me, to your point about when he says things like, you know, I'm an 11-year-old and I want to do what I want to do. And, you know, it sounds like he has less structure at his mom's, and, you know, you guys have a different setup, which is exactly what you should have. The truth is I think a lot of times, especially with kids, and he's still young, like, I don't want to act like, oh, he's old and he should be making this decision. But because you guys can only be a piece of this puzzle, because there's many family members, instead of focusing on how to change Vinny. It's focusing on how are we going to respond and be with Vinny. Meaning, he's with his mom majority of the week. So there's, even though during, when he's at your house, you still have the limits and the boundaries and everything, it's less about, God, how do we get him to see this differently? How do we change this scenario for him? You know, and it's, again, it's going back to these really basic principles of we can't change other people. But what we can do is shift around how we work with this person or how we love this person. And I like to use the touchy-feely words. I don't know what your partner, you know, like what resonates with him, but it's less about, because basically then every weekend he comes, it's a setup for you guys to just get upset because he's coming in and there's like a part of your heart that's like, I hope it's not like it was last time, but there's no indication that it's not going to be. So it's not, so the hope you have no control over. What you have control over is here's how we're going to handle this weekend. We are going to do a fun thing or two because Vinny, you know, when we say like the kid only wants to come over if we're doing something fun, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Like that's kind of the way kids think. When they live with us Monday through Sunday, that's not always going to happen because, you know, but for him, like when he's coming on the weekends, he wants to know there's something to look forward to. That doesn't mean you have to like pay for things or take him on trips or baseball games. It's just, it kind of makes sense that he thinks that way. I think sometimes as adults, we put a lot of adult expectation on kids, like your partner, of course, and you too, and your son feel offended by him and saddened, not just offended, like angry at him, but man, we want to be closer to you. Like we love you. And then when he doesn't offer that, it hurts so much. And we, you know, feel like we need to figure him out, but instead it's, what are we getting? What can we give him? What are we not going to set ourselves up for? How are we going to talk about this before he shows up so we have a better expectation of how the weekend will go for us and we're going to love him? And again, a lot of this sounds really general, like, well, yeah, Kathy, what does that mean? What does that look like? You got to be set with that intention before anything changes in the, you know, in your relationship with him. Like there has to be a sense of, instead of changing Vinny or thinking we need to change him, we are going to go in with a new intention.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is, you know, it sounds like you're doing, you know, to Kathy's point, an 11-year-old is probably going to be attracted towards where he can be on his phone as much as he wants. And so that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you...
Doesn't mean it's right.
Doesn't mean it's right. But of course, that's, if I was 11, I would like to do that. So when you do set up your family boundaries, he's going to get pissed. Mm-hmm. And when he gets pissed, your work, Ashley, is going to be, can you kind of still stay within your good place instead of reacting and getting mad back because he wants to be on his phone the whole time? And I really think, to Kathy's point, is like you don't have any control over really any. Not only do you have not have control over Vinny, you don't have control over your husband or your other son. At best, you have maybe some influence. So I would start with you. What energy are you bringing to it? Where can you have? Can you locate yourself and figure out if you are kind of an ego or you're in a triggered place? And when you are, can you honestly admit it instead of fire back at somebody? And then, you know, when the week is over and Vinny's not there anymore, that's when your work is going to happen with your other son and your partner, is how do we, instead of take 5 days to recuperate from this emotional roller coaster, how can you minimize that to 3 days? And then maybe the 3 days will go to 2 days. And it's not going to be a perfect thing, mm-hmm. but... And like Kathy said, these are all kind of like generalizations, and I don't know how much it helps, but... If we told you exactly what to say or what to do, it wouldn't stick anyways. This is about what energy are you bringing to it.
Well, and I like what Todd just said. It's the blend of, he's right. Like even, you know, I'm kind of making you and your 6-year-old son and your partner kind of a team. Like, here's how we're going to do it. The truth is you can't control them either. So it's really just you, Ashley. It's like how you're going to go into it. Like, and you can let your partner and your son know, listen, Vinny's coming this weekend. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see him. But I'm going to... Yeah. Take a deep breath through some things. And when he gets angry at us or pushes back, You know, I may take a walk or remove myself, or, you know, I am going to set up a few things where we can do some fun things that he has to look forward to. My point is it's not about which things you choose to do or how you manage your own emotion, but you do something different and role model that for your partner and your son. And when your son comes to you and says, this is really hard, say, I know it is for me too. And so this is why I've been doing, you know, whatever it is you choose to do, like, you know, trying to, you know, do something special when Vinny's here, like take him to lunch or something, and then giving him some space. And it's why I've chosen to not get into arguments with him about certain things that I can't control. Again, we don't have enough information to like give you the exact words, but it really is, as everything is, just an internal shift in you that instead of Vinny should be different or I should change Vinny or how do I make my partner not feel depressed? It's just you, Ashley.
Well,
and they'll look to you for guidance.
And then the last thing I'll share, and then we'll give you a chance to respond, Ashley, if you want. These are, you know, challenges, and I don't want to understate it, you know, mixed families, stepkids, like this is really complicated. Even in the best conditions, parenting is hard. And these are more layers to the hardships. But other thing I want to do is invite you to consider what's working in your life. What do you have to be grateful for? Because it's so easy for us to kind of just focus on our problems. And my only invitation to you is that there's always something good that you can not ignore the bad stuff, but bring some attention to the good stuff as well. So,
and one more thing, like a Vinny gratitude list, you know, like after he leaves, there's going to be a lot of feelings, but also what worked this weekend? What were the moments that it felt good with Vinny? What were the, you know, when we had a good laugh, because acknowledging that doesn't take away the pain or the challenge that you face, but at least it gives you something to hold on to as, you know, a grounding agent. Okay.
What do you think, Ashley?
I mean, I think it's great advice. I have to, from talks before, I think I'm definitely more on the empath side.
Yeah.
So I can try to go into it as happy as possible, but I do really soak up Steve's sadness, you know? And so I think that really does give me a lot of stuff to work on. And I know luckily my mom tells me all the time, do not take what your children do personally. They're not coming after you. It's not about you. And, you know, I remember being a teenager and fighting with my mom. And I think that's something that Steve hasn't quite grasped yet. So I think I have to do a better job at modeling that. And, you know, I was more excited about Vinny coming, and after the arguments and tension afterwards, now like, oh, great, Vinny's coming. So I think I really have to be like, yeah, let's go to the park. Let's go play basketball. Let's do some fun stuff. I'm so excited. And hopefully that'll bleed over. I mean, you're right. That's really all I can do. I can't.
And the thing is,
control anybody.
Exactly. And if you do feel yourself to be an empath, which I can really relate to, there is, not only are you going to do your best to like show up, but not just for Vinny, for yourself. It's like, I'm going to show up for myself because it's easier when I'm in a good place. And then when you do feel like you're doing a lot of absorbing, like you're noticing what's going on, because that's, you know, that's actually today I was just telling Todd, I have to go away for a little bit too, because I feel like when I'm absorbing a lot of things, is you have to acknowledge the two things I say to myself: all of this that I'm absorbing is not mine. So I don't need to be trying to process this through my body. And then within the excitement of let's go to the park, let's do something different, take some breaks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not just about put this on your shoulders of make this a great weekend for Vinny. No, this is not all your job. When you're in the presence of Vinny, do your best, take some breaks. And when your partner is feeling overwhelmed, you can support him, but it's not yours. And it's just like with our kids. We can't move it through someone else's body, nor can we take someone else's crap and move it through our body. You see? So it's right. Like the fact that you understand yourself as an empath, even though it can be overwhelming, it helps you because you know that you've tried to process other people's emotions and it doesn't work. It makes you sick.
So what I'm going to do, Ashley, is I'm going to mute you just so we can go to the next person. But to kind of close, I just shared in the chat box, or at least I'm trying to share in the chat box, Kathy and I did a podcast called Setting Boundaries with Love. It's podcast number 198. Happened a few years ago. I don't even remember if it was a good one or not. Hopefully it was. But it might not
be. I don't remember 2 weeks such ago.
It might not be. It might be a fun one to check out. So that'll be in the, if you're listening to this afterwards, it'll be in the resources section of the show notes of the podcast. So Ashley, and thanks for your vulnerability and sharing. So,
well, and you're so not alone, because we were just reading over a lot of, Todd pulled every question from the Team Zen page to make sure that we're answering everything, because sometimes things get too far down the page. And I was looking, and there's common themes. That yours is a very common theme. You know, it may not be the exact same setup or with a son that age, but it's like, how do I manage around someone who takes up a lot of energy in the room, even when they're not there? Mm-hmm, yeah. You know, they like absorb all the air, even when they've left. And it's like, how do I not get roped into that when he's present and when he leaves? And how do I let other people be with their emotions? And how do I love them and take care of myself? It's very common. So,
all right. I'm going to go to Jennifer in a second. I do want to say one other thing. This is a really kind of short question that I got a few weeks ago, and it says, any tips on how to deal with the cavemen we love in our lives?
Mm-hmm.
Am I a caveman?
Not really.
Do you guys remember that cartoon when we were little kids called Captain Caveman?
He had that.
He had the big club, and he said, Captain Caveman. Remember that?
I don't know what he did. Did he help people?
Yeah, he like clubbed the ground
that
and
helps.
Things would shake.
That
and
helps.
He's Captain Caveman. I'll try to find a YouTube preview of it. It just made me think of a podcast we did not too long ago, and we did it after the conference, and it's called How Do I Get My Partner To ... Mm-hmm. So I'm putting that in the show notes as well. How Do I Get My Partner To – I got to do the link. So the link will be in there. So we're going to go to Jennifer next, but if there's anybody else live on this call that wants to ask a question, just put in the chat box you got something. In the meantime, hi, Jennifer.
Hey. This one is about my relationship with my mom, and I kind of was inspired to ask the question because of the podcast you guys did about reparenting with Robin Berman. And it was funny because we actually, as part of our parent education series in my town, we brought Dr. Berman here. So I had an opportunity. She actually came twice. She did a keynote, and then we did a book club with her. And because I organized the events, I got to spend a lot of time with her, and it was really like a personal therapy session. So this was a few years ago. So I've been thinking about this a lot, and I really don't have resolution. But my mom, not to get into a lot of details, but basically my mom is a very narcissistic and toxic person. And it's been really painful for me as an adult to process through, especially becoming a mom, to process through the feelings of what I didn't get from her and do it in a healthy way so that I can be a good mom to my boys. So I'm actually a big fan of the blog Hey Sigmund, and she had a great post a couple years ago. It's called When Someone You Love Is Toxic, How to Let Go of Toxic People Without Guilt. And so long story short, I severed my relationship with her. Mm. So although I know what's going on with her through my siblings, I do not talk to her or have any contact with her. She's blocked in everything, phone calls, emails. She can't contact me. Part of the guilt was that I am her daughter and she's my mom. So I have an obligation to have her in my life. But part of the guilt was also, what kind of example does this set for my kids? That, you know, on the surface, when you don't get along with a parent, then you just eliminate them from your life. And then the last piece was for my siblings, obviously we have a responsibility to care for her as she gets older. But I basically came to the decision that having her in my life was so harmful to me that I couldn't be healthy having that relationship with her. and in not being healthy, I couldn't be a good mom to my boys. So my twins are only 10, so they don't really understand the whole situation. But my teenage son, I've talked to him about it and explained it to him on a kind of a broader level. And it was actually funny in the conversation I had with him a couple of years ago when I said to him, explained what had happened. And I'm like, all right, so, you know, do you have any questions? And he had seen me a lot. He had seen me a lot after our interactions, like a lot of crying, a lot of fighting, a lot of, he had kind of observed some of that. And I didn't want it to be confusing for him. So I explained it to him and I was like, do you have any questions or anything? He's like, nope. And I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he doesn't have any questions. And my therapist helped me to understand that he has no frame of reference for what having a mother like that is.
Right.
So anyway, the big question part is, and with my siblings, what we did was my husband is not emotionally connected to my mother at all because he saw how much damage she did to me through the years. And Vinny and I have been together for, I don't know, almost 30 years, no more than that, like over 30 years. And so he's seen her behavior. So the point of the matter is that he is kind of my proxy. So when something's going on, if there's a financial discussion or health discussion or whatever, my siblings contact him. So I was able to say, all right, I'm not going to feel guilty about being a bad sibling because Vinny will take my place. Mm-hmm. So that's worked really well. It's a little confusing with my twins because they know she's alive and they know that my siblings do see her, not on a regular basis because they don't have a good relationship with her either. But so some questions, they've been asking some questions lately. And she's also, my mom's also being moved into more of a intensive like healthcare environment. She's in a continuing care retirement community. And so she's now going into more of the nursing home section. So she's not doing well. And I guess because the boys have been asking questions and because I am aware of the fact that she's not doing well, I'm struggling with the idea of forgiveness. And quite honestly, like, I just want her to die. Like, I don't even want her to be alive anymore. I feel like, and I felt that way for a long time. And I know that sounds horrible because people will say to me like, well, of course you love your mom. And I'm like, you know what? I don't love her because she's hurt me in so many ways. And I know, you know, people say, well, she loved you the best she could. And I'm like, but it wasn't love. It was manipulation and it was, you know, control. And it was all about taking care of her. And I was never seen or heard with my mom. I mean, that is a huge trigger for me. I mean, whenever I would try to speak up, she would just shut me down and say, you shouldn't feel that way. When my first son was born, I had postpartum depression and I begged her not to leave. And she lived in Maryland at the time and we're in New Jersey. And she left and I wound up in the psych unit and it was terrible. And then when one of my twins had open heart surgery as a baby and she wouldn't come to the hospital and be with us or see us because she said it was too hard for her and she couldn't handle it. And so it was just like one thing after another, and like in getting married, she didn't help me and having babies, buying a house. Like, so I really don't feel any guilt about not having her in my life. My question is, now that it looks like she's closer to dying, I guess I'm trying to, part of me says, I'm going to feel such relief when she dies. And then part of me says, am I going to be left with, I guess the question is about forgiveness. So for me to forgive, to free myself, is different than going and seeing her and kind of like seeing her on her deathbed and, you know, saying goodbye. Like, I know that wouldn't be good for me. I know that would be really harmful for me, but there's still that little piece of me that's like, oh my gosh, am I such a bad person for not doing that? Is that the wrong thing to do? So I guess I'm just not really sure. I'm not really sure what to do or like where to go with those feelings, because I feel like I've worked through so many emotions about my relationship with her, but ultimately there isn't a day that goes by that I don't feel sadness because I don't have a good relationship with her. So I've accepted the fact that it's never, ever, I mean, she's old now, but I accepted a long time ago, I would never have the mother I always wanted.
Right.
And I've accepted that I still can be, like Dr. Berman, she said in our little mini therapy sessions, she said, you know, the beauty of what you're going through is you're breaking the cycle. You're breaking that cycle of that toxic mom. And now you're being a different kind of mom to your kids and to focus on that. And I really have, but I guess there's this little part of me inside that's like, you should just go and you should see her one last time and you should say goodbye. And that's the right thing to do. And so I guess that's my question.
Sure.
Am I a bad person for not going? Because I really don't want to.
Well, I can answer very easily that you're not a bad person no matter what. So you can take that off the agenda. Okay. I think that the thing that I kept visualizing as you were talking is really, and I'm using that word on purpose, really taking the time to visualize when your mom passes away. I would, you know, usually I'm like, stay here, stay here, stay here. In this situation, I would jump ahead. And when you get that phone call that your mom is no longer here, what will you have wanted to have done? So don't try and pretend, don't go, not the emotional place, not the, oh my God, I'll be sad or I won't be sad or she deserves it or I deserve this or not that, but like what will make you feel complete in you, not for her, for you, because this is not about doing her a favor. It's not about, this is about, because you mentioned your boys a few times and it sounds like your older boy gets it. And like you said, he doesn't have a frame of reference for a relationship like this, but you know, is there part of you that's like, my younger boys are kind of asking the question, do I need to help them understand this? Or are they asking, can we meet our grandmother? I don't know if they're asking that question, but I think that it's interesting because this is a very different situation. I don't want to compare it too much to Todd. Because Todd still has a relationship with his dad, but your dad is also
pain in
a
the
narcissist,
ass.
But, yeah. And that's the thing is I don't want to be like, he's the same. Cause it sounds like your story is completely different,
right.
But there are a lot of, you know, like I kind of view this through the lens for me as the daughter-in-law of what do I want because let me backtrack a little bit. Your mom in a fragile and vulnerable state is a different person. That doesn't mean now you need to mend everything. That's not what I'm saying. But the risk that was maybe present before may not be as present when she's vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I say that only because I have experienced that with his dad. When his dad was very healthy, I was much more at risk. Now I'm not as much. And that doesn't, again, different story, but you may do your visualization about after your mom passes. And like you said, you're like, I feel peaceful about that. Like it's better for me. The question is not about that moment. It's about later. How will you be able to embrace that whole experience and say, I followed my heart. If you did, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. Jen, like it doesn't matter what story I'm sharing or what a book says or what a therapist says. If you can look at this scenario and be like, when she passes and I get this call, I did the steps that I knew to do, then it doesn't matter. Then you don't even need advice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So go ahead.
So a few things. One is, apparently this is a theme for the people on this call. Melissa said, same story, and my mom died 2 years ago. I have had a hard time with this, go see her. Ashley says, same with my father and his entire family. Thank you for sharing. And MJ says, same with my mother-in-law. I can really relate to your story, Jennifer. Thank you for sharing.
We need an extra
Zen
talk. You
guys
need to get on a Zen talk together.
Yeah,
that'll be great. Seriously, I mean, it helps to have people with this experience.
Maybe we could do that. So my ideas are, first of all, regarding your boys, what you've been teaching your boys is that mom knows how to take care of herself.
Correct.
So up until this moment, you have done what you have had to do to take care of yourself.
Yes.
So no regrets there. There are, and Kathy and I can't tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. Nobody on this call can tell you what to do.
Because we really don't know.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have any, like, well, right. This is the right, thing. We
right.
don't.
This is your decision. But having said that, I will kind of maybe share some ideas. And I try to err on the side of love versus absence of love. And I know that's easy to say because I'm not in your situation, Jennifer. But your mom, you've heard all the things.
She knows all the things.
Your mom did the best she could with what she had. Your mom probably got the shit kicked out of her emotionally when she was little. It taught her that this is the only way I can have my daughter. Your mom has, so anyways, and then there's other role models like Wayne Dyer. I don't know if you ever read Wayne, and he passed away a few years ago. His dad was awful, like awful, like boozer, beat his mom up, left his mom, and you know, he did all these awful things. And he finally, over decades of work, came to this place where not only did he forgive his dad, he actually loved his dad. And it's the beginning of the Tao Te Ching book that he wrote. Mm-hmm. So there's
But his dad had passed away.
His dad had
he
passed away.
He didn't have to do it in human form.
Right.
He went, which is a different story.
He shaked down his gravestone and did it there. He actually went there, and I'll try to find the YouTube clip, with the intention to literally urinate on his dad's grave.
That was how pissed he was.
And when he got there, he ended up falling to his knees and saying, "I now know what it was that you were teaching me." And in a weird, demented way, your mom has taught you how to be a good mom by showing you how not to do it. So those are just some ideas, but they're just ideas.
Right, because that's the thing about forgiveness and about love is when Todd's saying, you know, err on the side of love, that can be in human form and that can be after she passes. That can be err on the side of love, love for you or love for her. You know, like it's, the thing is these are general, in the end, and I think you've already gone through this a million times, like you said, with your therapist, but this is all you, honey. And you're going to do the right thing. Like, there is no right thing. There is right thing for you. And just the fact, because there's a lot of people who don't even think about this. You know, like there are, I have friends who get frustrated with their parents and they're like, well, I'm just not going to talk to them. And they haven't processed through where they are with it or why they're doing what they're doing. And so then that's what makes everything so uncomfortable. It sounds like you've made some decisions. But the question, and this is why you're bringing it up, is the decision that I made has been correct. And your question now is, has the decision that I made still apply now? And you get to decide that. And, you know, without thinking I must change it, you just have to it's painful. You don't have to go to her, but you have to re-go inside yourself and decide, does what I decided still stand true today now that I know she's failing? And you may feel, yes, it's, I got to stay here because if I go see her, I will re-traumatize myself. Or you may say, she's vulnerable. I might bring my boys. You might not. Take that off the list if that feels like too much. And I might go tell her, you know, goodbye.
Well, and the bottom line is there's some unpredictability.
Yeah,
even though your mom's in a nursing home, she could be as nasty as ever to you.
Yeah, true.
Or yeah. She could, you know, we've all seen the endings where there's this resentment, and at the end of the movie, everything turns out loving and it could be
That's
a movie.
Not life, yeah.
It could be a movie ending, or it could turn out nasty. Like, the bottom line is you don't know. But to Kathy's point, you got to walk in with a certain attention and clarity, as clear as you can be, which is hard to do because there is no right answer.
Yeah, redo it, Jen. Like, go into your therapist's office or with your husband, sit down and say, everything I've done up to this date on June 1st has been purposeful and I stand by all of it. Mm-hmm. Now on June 1st, knowing what I know, is this still my choice? And either way is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But just the fact that you're bringing up something in your body is saying, I have to relook at this.
That's what I think. There's some doubt inside of you. Otherwise, you would not be bringing this up. You've been on every Zen talk since we started. And I'm sure this has been bothering you since we started. But now your mom is getting closer to her transitioning out. And something inside of you, and it doesn't mean you have to go run to your mom, but you have to like let whatever is inside of you come out and be processed.
Because remember, it's not for her. It's for you. So if you choose to do something different, if that's what you decide, hello, baby, It is not for her. I know. Melanie just held her baby up and it was just fun to see.
Look at that kid.
Hi, baby.
That kid's a winner. I could tell.
Hi, sweetie.
I know, baby. That kid's a winner.
Aww. It kind of brings right. us back to ourselves, yes. right? This is all we are.
We're going to have Melanie have her baby.
Just hold the baby so we can all remember. And I mean that with love either way. Like you're just a baby. We're all just babies and they live inside of us. And you know what's right and you're going to do what's right for you. Not for your mom, not for your boys, not for you. This is your decision.
All right, let's shut up. Okay. Jennifer.
Yes.
What are your thoughts, if any?
So thank you for all that. Just even saying that I'm not a bad person if I decide not to see her really helps, because kind of my relationship with my mom all along was, if I didn't do what she wanted and if I didn't meet her needs and if I didn't help her through whatever struggle she had, then I was a bad daughter and I was a bad person and I was cut off emotionally. And So I have been fighting through those feelings of unworthiness for a long time. So the fact that you guys are saying that to me, it really, really helps. And it also really helps to think about it just from my perspective, like what I need and what my heart needs. And, my parents didn't get along. I was thinking about what, all of that when Ashley was speaking, and my dad died suddenly of a heart attack when I was 18. He was 51 and he was on a bike ride. And I felt like it was like the greatest gift to my mom, because then she got rid of my dad and didn't have to divorce him. And yet I didn't treat my dad very well when he was alive because I was siding with my mom so much. Mm-hmm. And so there's like, I've been working through all those feelings too. And then I'm like, why is she still alive and he was gone and he was the loving one and she isn't? And, focusing back on me and saying, okay, at this moment, what is going to be okay for me? And I think instinctually, I know that being with her will be harmful to me. But having this discussion of not knowing the right or wrong answer, and you can't give me the right or wrong answer, but just knowing that I have permission to honor those feelings and to not feel bad about that.
Namaste.
So thank you very much.
Well, and ask your, because we all have self-doubt. Jennifer, you're no exception. And when Kathy said you are a good person, tell your husband who loves you in this very vulnerable, raw place that you're in regarding your mom, keep reminding me I'm a good person. Like explicitly ask him to keep on saying that to you, because you need that support.
Yeah, you need to hear it, because it's not a tape for you. You weren't given the tape.
Right.
So even though I'm not like, oh, so go externally and tell people, and not everybody's going to do it, but the people that love us the most see us and they can create that tape for us. Or now they can help us stream it, because we don't have tapes anymore, but they can help us with the language, you know, dating myself. But, and you know, somebody else had written in question, it sounds like Todd said this already, that there is something about our parents and their passing and the history that we have with them, that it's just never going to go away. And it just doesn't matter what kind of relationship you had with them or how they passed away or when they passed away. It's kind of like, and I don't say this in a metaphysical way, but it's like a ghost that will live around us always. So even when I say to you, figure out how you can bring closure to this, it's not like you're going to make this perfect choice and then when it's over, you're like, I made the perfect choice. You know, I had a therapy session this week, and my dad passed away a year ago. And I just realized, I mean, I went in to the session thinking, oh, I'm good. Or here's where I am. And I completely lost it again and was completely lost again. And, you know, anniversaries tend to do that. But I realized that I wasn't, like, to Todd's point, I wasn't asking Todd for what I needed at this time, which was not for him to do anything and walk, carry me through it. But I need to celebrate my dad's passing. And my sister doesn't need that. And my mom really doesn't need that much, but I do. But they're not wrong. See, it's not like they should do it. They're not wrong. I just need it. So who's the person who loves me the most? He'll help me do that. That's, so my point is that's just my story. And it's just, everybody here has a story about their parents either being alive or passing. And we all kind of, I think sometimes we're like, oh, I wish I had their situation, but we all have ghosts. And it's, it's so in our face all the time because we're parenting. You know what I mean? Right. We are, yes. We're like, I'm a mom. Who is my mom? Oh yeah. Or here's Todd. He's a dad. My dad, you know, like it's in our face constantly and our reactions and when we hear their voice. And, so I just want you to know that even in what seems so like, no, you know, you're not alone. It's, we can't have the same stories, but I think we're all from, I'm getting from the chat here. A lot of people understand.
Well, Melissa just said, I changed, because Melissa's the one that said, go see her. And she says, I changed my vote. I changed my vote. You choose so hard, stay strong.
Oh, that's
so,
nice.
Anyways, but yeah, but there's going to be people in Jennifer's life that say, oh, you got to go see her.
Of course.
And then there's going to be other people say, stay away. Mm-hmm. She doesn't deserve it. And you can listen to that,
absolutely.
But it doesn't matter. Get quiet and figure out what feels right. And if you make a mistake, you adjust. If you decide today, I'm never going to see her again, and you wake up tomorrow and saying, I think I need to see her, or vice versa. You see her, and you're like, God, that was an awful idea. I'm not doing that again.
Right.
You know, just
nothing's set in stone.
There's no perfection here. So anyways.
And, you know, going off of Jennifer's question, but kind of going to this conversation for all of us, we've got to recognize this in ourselves, and we got to recognize this when it's coming toward us, is everybody speaks from their own life and their own story. So when someone shares with us like, oh, I'll take it off our parents just to lessen the weight of this, but like, oh, should I put my child in an AP class? The parent who is responding is going to respond from their experience with it, mm-hmm. not with an authority about what's right and wrong. Because there are going to be some people who regret not seeing their mother before passing. And there are some people who will say, oh my God, do not do that based on my experience. Do you see? And I'm saying that to you guys because do you see why that it's always helpful to pull in, this is what Team Zen is, to pull in people's perspective and advice because maybe it'll help us think differently. But in the end, we have no idea because it's like, it's such a personal thing. And it's a personal thing with our kids. You know, some people will say, oh, you should get your kid a therapist. And some people will say, oh, don't, because I didn't get my kid a therapist and that worked out. That's their experience. And we have to decide, which feels like a lot of weight because we like to have other people be responsible. We're like, you tell me what to do.
I'm going to come at it from a practical perspective.
Shocking.
What's the cost? And I was just on with a client who's having a hard time with his wife this morning, and I went through this process with them, and we won't go through it all with you, Jennifer, but think about what's the cost of action. And in this case, the action would be going seeing your mom. Like, what is the cost of that? What bad things might happen? And then counter, and
the other side
is, what is the cost of inaction? What happens if you choose to kind of follow the same pattern that you've done for the last X amount of years? What is the potential cost of that? And like I said, this is more like balance sheet, debits, credits, pluses and minuses. It's like a good bad list, which is not, when it comes to matters of the heart, you shouldn't do it. But if you're kind of stuck and you don't know what to do, I don't know, brainstorm ideas on the cost of action versus inaction.
And the last thing is because pros and cons always remind me of Cheryl Strayed, because she's a pros and cons person. And, you know, Jen, she doesn't talk to her dad anymore. And she chose that no matter what happens with her father, that she is no longer connected to her father, regardless of he's ill, whatever it may be. She doesn't even know. So I want you to know that you're
not. Cheryl's a good person.
Yeah, Cheryl's a good person, yeah. Right? Right? Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, maybe even look up her writing about that. I know someone was reading Tiny Beautiful Things, but she comments about her dad a lot. And on Dear Sugar, she does too. Like, she's like, you know, I had to let him go. And that is, you know, it was the best thing for her and her family. So do you see how it's like, so I just wanted to throw her out there, her energy, because you can maybe hold on. You know what she's like, and you know she's good. So you can kind of, you know, anchor yourself to Cheryl and be like, you know.
So yeah. Any last things, Jennifer?
No, but I like both of those suggestions a lot, because I do. I love Cheryl, and she, you know, embodies compassion. So knowing that someone is as warm and loving and compassionate as her has the same situation. So I appreciate that. And it's funny because the other day my son got into kind of a bad situation, bad choice situation. And I had him do that. I had to do the, I was calling it risk benefit. I said, all right, you know, just take some time to write down if this situation comes up again, what are the risks and what are the benefits? And that is something that I've used in my life and I didn't think about it for this situation. So thank you for that too. Thank you both for being so kind and loving, and everybody for listening and allowing me to share, because it's really been just helpful to have that support. So thank you so much.
And to say it out loud, just like that, get it out. I feel like get something out of my body. I'm like so much better.
Well, and you're not
in that drive. Stuck in there somewhere.
Yes, it's stuck.
And you're not the only one who derived value out of that discussion. It helped me. It helped Kathy. Yeah. I'm guessing it helped some of the other people on this call. So thank you, Jennifer, for doing that. Mm-hmm. So, but that was a heavy one. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see, I'm going to mute Jennifer.
Heavy's good to me.
Heavy's really good. But it's just weird that the next question is about, you know, a little kid kicking and scratching their mom.
That can be heavy for the mom.
Yeah, I guess it could.
And scratched.
So we have 10 minutes left. Should we jump in?
Sure.
Okay. My daughter's 4.5. She's the only child and is having trouble controlling her actions. She hits, kicks, scratches me frequently. I'm currently reading Nonviolent Communication. I guess that's a book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's actually a philosophy.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how to talk so little kids will listen. But I'm still having trouble getting through to her. I'm considering getting rid of any and all books, shows, and toys that reference a bad guy or a villain of any kind, because she's got it into her head that anyone who does something she doesn't like or not exactly the way she wanted or exactly the right moment is a villain and needs to be defeated. She loves stories and play acting, but this has gotten out of hand. So the bottom line is 4.5-year-old is kicking and scratching.
I like picture her like doing these karate moves, like, you know, and I'm not laughing at the situation, because when it's your child, it can be like, oh my God, this is overwhelming. But it's that she thinks that anybody who's going against what she believes is a villain, you know, doesn't that make so much sense? And I'm thinking child developmentally, but for a, you know, 5-year-old, like, things are still very black and white. You're either good or you're bad. They don't have abstract thinking yet. So if you hurt me, even if your intention wasn't to hurt me, you are a villain. You are bad. It's like, before abstract thinking, we all have borderline personality disorder. We're all like, you're either here or you're here. And it's our brain growing. We're, you know, we're learning. And it doesn't mean that 5-year-olds can't have understanding and empathy, but a lot of times it's very rote because they're told to, you know, kind of like, this is what we do. Because sometimes their impulses are different than what they learn to do. And then eventually it all comes together. And, you know, I mean, we're all, you know. But anyway, did you want to?
Well, my question is, let's say whoever wrote this question really doesn't know exactly what to do in the moment where the kid is kicking and scratching.
Sure.
So I'm scratching you, and I'm 4.5 years old.
You're pushing me.
I'm scratching you. What do you say to me?
So
what do you do to my hands?
What I would envision doing, and my kids would probably say I did this, is I'd grab their hands and I would say, oh, you're hurting me. You know, that we kind of talked about this last time about gentle hands, and say, oh, you're hurting me. I understand that you were frustrated that I did not do what you wanted me to do. I get that. And you can be mad, but hurting me will not solve it. It won't solve it. And it's being very, and again, that doesn't mean like done, they'll never do it again. But a lot of times
he may not even stop in that moment. He might
correct.
Keep doing it, right.
The things that are so important, it gets down to basics with stuff like this. Eye contact, tone, acceptance of the feeling, explaining what they can do different instead, gentle hands, talk to me, write about it, go kick your pillow, giving them an alternative to the hitting and the kicking, telling your 5-year-old that when they get frustrated, you know, I understand you think I'm a villain. What is that, you know, what does that villain look like? Or what does that feel like? Can you draw about it? Or like, yeah, I get that. I get frustrated at people too. Like joining your child in their feeling, mm-hmm. but giving them a different outlet for it. It's so interesting because, you know, again, is it a girl or a boy? I can't.
It's just, my daughter.
My daughter. So she's actually beginning to recognize what doesn't feel good and what is right and wrong in society. So there's a health in it. But then the question is, do we then, when something doesn't go our way, hurt people and, you know, enforce things? Or is this, I always view these experiences with little kids as it's a door wide open, teaching time wide open. But what we get lost in, and she says this in the question, is the fear of, or actually she doesn't, someone said it in their other question, but this is probably what it is. the fear of, have I done this or have I done this wrong thus far, meaning past, or will she be like this when she's 10, 12, 18, future? Just do now. Just don't be afraid of your daughter. And I say that not because she said she was, but I think we go into fear of, oh my God, she's hitting, or she thinks everyone's a villain. So how am I going to control this? I'm going to get rid of all the books. I'm going to like sterilize her environment. And instead it's a recognizing there's some normalizing, child developmentally appropriate, recognizing what's happening in her brain and why she's doing this, being competent and saying, no, you cannot hit me. Mm-hmm. This hurts. Mm-hmm. And our relationship is too important to me to let you hurt me in this way.
Do you think a four and a half year old can
absolutely
let that sink in?
That's a kindergartner. That's a preschooler. Mm-hmm. Preschoolers are learning all about socialization. That's what preschool should be. Too often preschools have become sheets and, you know,
flashcards.
And but
we got to get these guys ready for the SATs.
We got it. They might as well just take it. They might as well take a PSAT in preschool.
Yeah.
But in preschool, what they're learning is how to socialize, how to manage their emotions, how to be sitting on a circle, in a circle, how to sit on the rug when someone takes your place, how to sit next to your friend at lunch. That's what preschool should be. So you understand that that's what she's going through right now. She's trying to figure that out. So the door is open for you to support her rather than fear that she's some kind of mean, evil child. She's mm-hmm. not. Now, if you feel, no, Kathy, you don't understand, she's really hurting people or she's hurting our dog or she's hurting, then get help for sure. And maybe it's not even for her yet, but it's for you. There's nothing wrong with seeking support, or there's nothing wrong with, you know, if she's in preschool talking to the teachers about, can you monitor this too? Like, I'm always a big fan of getting help. But I think the most important thing is if the things I've said are pretty, like, you're like, yeah, that's really what it's like. It's pretty typical. She's all, you know, that's what kids do. That's what, you know, that's what our kids did.
Yes.
There's actually one over there. There's JC's. She's up there.
It's cause and effect.
She's eating Sour Patch Kids at noon.
She's got her headphones on. She can't hear us.
And then Cameron's over there because she wants us to give her a ride to the mall.
She's going mall jamming.
I know. You want to come over here, Jace? It's a Zen talk. No.
Zen talk?
Yes. Yeah. It's Team Zen.
Fun.
I know.
You'll be famous.
Okay. Or not.
We're at Jim's together.
So,
she's a marriage.
Anyway, I guess I just want to make, just to help you with the way you're feeling. That's the most important thing. And if you have a different viewpoint, there's Jacy. She has her earphones on. She can't hear.
Kids these days.
Kids.
Kids in that rock and roll rubbish.
I wish there was more rock and roll rubbish.
So I miss
rock and roll.
So do I.
We were playing a rock and roll song the other day, and I'm like, man, what were we listening to? It's so good.
I don't know, but it's all hip-hop, man.
I was playing the drums.
Like, even U2. U2 is in town.
That's what we were listening to, U2.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That U2 song that they did at the Emmys. So here's the deal. We're an hour in, so we're going to close shop.
Going to Taylor Swift tomorrow, everybody. We are.
T-Swizzle. I want to hear the song Mean.
She's not playing Mean.
And I'm really hoping to hear the song Mean.
She's not really going to sing Mean.
But basically, I want to hear Mean.
Yes.
But there was an honest idea out there about a elderly parents triad. You know, we're in this middle place where we got young kids and old parents, and it sucks, and it's hard, and it's not easy. If anybody's interested in having an older parents triad, meaning
we
have aging parents and we're having a hard time with certain aspects of it, shoot me an email and I will assemble you guys with the help of Sean.
And you don't have to do like the work. You don't have to like do Byron Katie. It's just about support system.
Yes.
You know, it's like other people going through this, and you can say, you don't have to do it in an hour. You can do it 30 minutes. Like, this is the thing, is all we're trying to do is gather like-minded people. It's not about do your work. We're not in school. This is just supportive, helpful. So, you know, and then if those of you with the aging parents thing have any questions, if you choose to put something together, please reach out to me, because obviously that's an area that I've had a lot of experience in. So
maybe I'll, I can't join a triad because I'm trying to be protective of my time, but if there is a triad out there, maybe I'll do a guest.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'll jump in.
Yeah.
Just to hear what's
going on. Todd, do this. Wear orange, everybody.
Wear orange.
Todd didn't start recording. I shouldn't blame him. We didn't start recording right on time.
This is what Wonder Woman does.
And so we didn't record when we were talking about Wear Orange. So for those of you who are like, why all the orange shirts? Again, this weekend is Wear Orange weekend. Moms Demand Action are supporting that. It's about common sense gun laws. It's about getting our protecting our children in the schools, elsewhere, movie theaters, downtown, everywhere. This is like, you know, I think it was Kimmy's shirt says, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore and not take action. I can't watch these things anymore and look my kids in the eye and say I'm doing everything I can do, because I wasn't before. Yeah. But now, let's do it.
We have a podcast today, Karen Brody.
Yeah, the Broads.
She talked about, she wrote a book called Daring to Rest.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's pretty good. So we've had a lot of Friday podcasts. You guys might be sick of us if you've been listening.
How is that possible?
Sometimes I get sick of me.
I know. Not when you're wearing these things. Okay, we got to take Cameron to
I'm taking Cameron.
Okay. All right, we love you.
All right.
If you have any questions, go to the Facebook page.
Keep trucking, guys. Adios.
Adios.